On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we recap the penultimate weekend of the regular season, which has given us a whole lot to talk about. These standings are an absolute mess in the best way possible. We begin with the American League, the Mariners' massive sweep over the Astros in Houston, the Guardians and Tigers fighting for the AL Central title, the Reds mop the Cubs to move into playoff position, the Mets are plummeting, the D-backs are alive, Clayton Kershaw is amazing, and a whole lot more baseball in this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that will not lose in September. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. No blown leads here.
No, we're chilling. We know how to handle our business.
We're in.
We know how to get to the finish line of the regular season and not choke in embarrassing fashion, unlike some teams that we're going to talk about. Maybe. Oh, boy. I am so happy to be back. Happy Monday, Jake. Thank you to Danny Wexelman for pinch potting for me on Friday. I certainly enjoyed listening on Saturday, but I am happy to be back. And oh, my goodness, Jake Mintz, we have 1 week of the regular season left, and we have a lot to talk about. Let's get to it. It is our opener.
We will begin today's show in the American League. There's drama in the National, don't get me wrong. But the American League is slightly more chaotic. The Seattle Mariners have done it. At the very least, they have set themselves up for success or monumental failure, sweeping the Astros over the weekend to give themselves a three-game lead and the tiebreaker in the American League West. Meanwhile, in the Central, the Cleveland Guardians taking 3 out of 4 from the Minnesota Twins while the Tigers get swept, meaning that that gap in the AL Central in the division race is just one little measly game. If the season ended today, all those results combined would have the Cleveland Guardians in the playoffs as the third wild card team in the American League. They have a tiebreaker over the Houston Astros. Those two teams have the same record. Where to even begin?
I am going to go ahead and make an executive decision and begin with the Mariners of Seattle and what they accomplished this weekend at Daikin Park. Maybe that was the key. Maybe that was the key all along, as they were terrified of the oranges of Minute Maid and they just couldn't handle themselves against the Astros when that was the moniker. But when we're talking about air conditioning, there is no problem. As Seattle goes into Houston, they were chilling. They were absolutely chilling this weekend against the Astros. This was a humongous moment for this franchise, truly. And I mean, okay, so game by game, right? So Friday, we get Brian Wu. I wrote a whole story about Brian Wu last week. He's awesome. He's fantastic for 5 innings, 1 hit over 5, scoreless. And then he leaves with a pec injury. Not good. They say he's day-to-day. Doesn't sound like it's too serious. Are we going to see him again this regular season? We'll see. Let's move that to the side and not go too bad vibes here. But Brian Wu's awesome. They get 4 homers. They win 4-0. Game 2, Saturday. George Kirby matches Framber Valdez, who is just not very good. Framber Valdez, not very good.
I would say on Saturday, he doesn't match him. I would say George Kirby was good at his job and Framber yes. was not. Framber has been, frankly, straight butt since he viciously attacked his own catcher, with a fastball. The Mariners race out to a steady 6-0 lead. Astros claw back on a Jeremy Pena grand slam and then threaten in the ninth. Runners on first and second with just one out. Carlos Correa at the dish. And this, if the Mariners hold on and win the division, this will be the play that did it. This will be what people remember. Correa duck farts one into shallow center, like to the right of center. And the ball, as it floats towards the turf, out of nowhere from the rafters, dives Victor Robles. It looks like it's going to drop Robles appears in screen, full extension, catches it, doubles off Jake Meyers at second base to end the game. Pandemonium in the Mariners booth. And then on Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN, Mariners put up 7 runs in the second inning with the J.P. Crawford grand slam, Cal Raleigh's 58th homer of the year, and they complete the freaking sweep. Jordan, how are the vibes?
So I think there are 2 quotes that really, by the way, we could go 15 minutes on the Victor Robles play because, oh my goodness. I mean, there's so many elements of it. Just like horrific base running from Jake Meyers. He wasn't even the tying run. Is that on Jake Meyers? Is that on the third base coach? Who knows? But that whole sequence was amazing and worth watching a million times from every angle and every broadcast, et cetera, et cetera. But let's get to the end result here, especially after they dominate on Sunday Night Baseball. And I think there's really 2 quotes that I wanna harp on to really summarize what this, how we got here, what this series kind of means to this franchise. The first one is from Cal Raleigh, and he said this, I think this was after the Saturday game. This is from Shannon Dreyer, of course, the great Mariners insider. This is from Cal Raleigh, quote, "This team has learned a lot over the past 2 years about finishing. You remember those struggles, and it makes you focus and that much more energetic when you get to this time. You recognize what is important this time of the year." And that is, you know, again, you're hearing a lot of similar sentiments from a lot of different teams and players who are excited to try to get to the postseason and trying to clinch that postseason spot. But it is true that this team in particular, while yes, they were in the postseason, finally ended the drought a few years ago, no team has been eliminated in the final week or final days as often as the Mariners over the last 10 years, even before, you know, Cal Raleigh was there and was both sending them to the postseason and then coming up just short at the end of the year.
Joey Wendell,
and so that
Chad
core,
Pinder.
Oh, just listen, man, there's been a lot of eliminations on the final weekend. And even if Cal Raleigh hasn't been there for all of them, he's been there for the last couple. He knows how painful that is. And so that sentiment is clear, that core that has been through this a couple of times, who tasted it in 22 and then have come up so close the last couple of years, understanding they have a good team, but haven't quite been able to get there. That, you know, you carry that with you, and clearly they're exercising those feelings and really harnessing that and putting it into their play on the field. But let's forget the kind of amorphous, oh, who wants it more? What does this mean to this group because of what they've dealt with in the past? Let's move that aside and simplify it, okay? Here's what Carlos Correa says after they get swept last night. Quote, this is from Chandler Rome. "I think we did try our best. They were just better." And here's the
deal. That's it, dude.
Jake Betts.
That's it.
Here's the thing. If you look at the current iteration of this Mariners team and this Astros team, and yes, listen, here's the thing, Houston, whether you end up sneaking into the playoffs or not, this has been a cursed season for Houston. They have dealt with more injuries than every other team. This roster is a shell of itself. Those are all valid excuses for where they are at. But however they got here, that roster is not nearly as good as the Seattle Mariners roster. And if you go position by position on both sides of the ball, this Mariners team is really, really, really good. And it seems like this weekend they showed up in Houston and they looked around and said, like, wait a minute, we're way better than them. This
That's
division race probably shouldn't have been a race to begin with. And we're the better team. We look like and have played like, and by the way, they were doing this before this awful skid, you know, at the end of August and into September. They look like one of the best teams in baseball. And this was a reminder that, wait a minute, they're just better. Like, all the hits, it doesn't matter. This roster is so much better than them right now, and they proved it this weekend, and now they can carry that into October.
If this was Team Blue and Team Orange, right? If this was Team A and Team B, and there was no historical bad juju, and the Astros didn't have this track record of pulling it out of their tush and winning in the end, you would look at these rosters and you would say, well, this team is way better than that team. You'd say the Mariners are way better than the Astros.
Right.
But that stuff is real. It does exist.
Yeah.
Especially when you consider that, remember how the 2022 Mariners postseason run ended, right? It ended in game 1 of that series, effectively, with the Yordan walk-off home run against Robbie Ray. Right. And so there are bad vibes in that building for that team. Now, I know a lot of the players are different, but still, that is not nothing. And it was very cool to see the Mariners stroll in there and take care of business and then some. And for all of the like tomato throwing at the Detroit Tigers, and we'll do some of that, the Astros right now are the ones that are not in the playoffs, right? The Astros are the ones that are on the outside looking in. Now, let's talk about the week ahead for them. Relatively good. They get to play the A's and the Angels. Granted, those are both on the road. The Mariners, on the other hand, have two home series against the Rockies and the Dodgers, a Dodgers team who by that point might not be playing for anything. Before we move to the AL Central, Jordan, I mean, the Mariners' magic number to clinch the division is 3, meaning combination of their wins and Houston losses. They could get it done Wednesday.
They could
win the division on Wednesday.
They could get it done before the Dodgers come to town, which should obviously be the goal here, because the Dodgers, whether they're trying or not, they still have a lot of good baseball players that can end up winning the baseball game. And so you don't want to be sweating in that final weekend. And so for Houston, while you have to at least take some comfort in terms of the likelihood of getting into the postseason playing the A's and the Angels, Sacramento hasn't been an especially fun place to play for anybody this time of year. And I could imagine the Astros at least getting into some ugly shootouts against the A's there, who I'm sure the A's and the Angels would love to be the reason the Astros don't make the playoffs.
So,
right? I mean, there's no doubt about that. Go ahead.
Is that the Mariners currently are the 2 seed. So like a week ago, remember, they were the 6 seed. And so the path for them was, once they made the playoffs, was going into Houston, who looked like they were going to be the 3 seed. Now the Mariners are the 2 seed. They've lopped over the Tigers, and they have the tiebreaker over the Tigers, right? So that is effectively a 3-game lead, meaning that they would get the bye and home field advantage in the DS, which is a big, big deal for them.
Oh, yeah. And that was my last point about the Mariners before we go to the Central here. I mean, they've won 14 of 15 since, you know, hitting rock bottom in Atlanta and calling on the Etsy witch to save the season. As you mentioned, the magic number is 3 to win the division, but it's all about that bye. I mean, right now the math says the division is going to happen, but to get enough wins to get that bye, because while this series in Houston was also amazing because of so much of that struggles in the second half when it was getting bad, was they can't do anything on the road. They've been so much better at home, and we know the whole team functions a lot better at home. And so because of that, that is why, like, getting that home field advantage would be absolutely massive. Go back to 2022. Yes, the Yordan homer in game 1, but it's also losing in 18 innings and not scoring in game 3. And so that is really what has been haunting Mariners fans. They want to see a run at home in the postseason for the first time in 25 years. And so we'll see if they can give themselves that opportunity. And then I guess the last thing that we literally didn't even mention, and we're not going to do it because we have so much else to get to, Cal Raleigh has 58 home runs. He passed Ken Griffey Jr. He hits another homer on Sunday Night Baseball. He's got I mean, listen, 60's right there. Whether or not he gets the American League record or not, I think 60 is that big round number that could make a difference in the eyes of some voters. And we'll see where he's at. I'm sure we'll have a couple more MVP conversations over the next week and beyond. But for now, let's just acknowledge that this dude's had 58 home runs, and it is amazing. And we will see where he ends up with these last few games against the Rockies and the Dodgers. Okay, so the Mariners are in great shape. Like we said, they are looking, they are staring their first division title since 2001 in the face. It is right there for them to take at home this week. What is a lot less clear is the American League Central, which will have the pleasure and privilege to watch this week as the Detroit Tigers come to Northeast Ohio to Progressive Field and play 3 games, which are technically regular season games, but my goodness, they will not feel that way. And starting with Tarek Skubal tomorrow, I am so excited to see how the Tigers respond to what has been a epic capitulation and potentially, again, there's still time. There's still time to make this a weird footnote and win the division and make us forget about how awful this has been the last few months. But it is going to be real dicey, and I am excited to watch it.
You can rewind to any point over the last couple of months and pick a point and be like, on this date, the Tigers were this far ahead of the Guardians, right? 15 and a half was the max. But I want to rewind all the way back to a freaking goddamn week ago when the Tigers, a week ago, had a 6.5 game lead. A 6.5 game lead over the Guardians in the Central. A week ago, that lead is now 1. Last week, the Guardians swept the Tigers in Detroit. Then this weekend, the Guardians took 3 out of 4 over the Twins in Minnesota, while the Tigers were swept at home by the Atlanta Braves, who are hot right now, must be said. And now it's 1 game. Now it's 1 game. The Tigers lost again. They have lost, I believe, 7 in a row. It feels like 50.
Six in a row, 9 of their last 10. And as you mentioned, it was not pretty. It was not especially competitive this weekend. They get blown out on Friday. Charlie Morton gives up a million runs and gets DFA'd. Yikes.
So Charlie Morton.
More on that in a second. Yeah.
Derailing 2 separate team seasons this year. It seems like a lovely job.
I know. It's heartbreaking. It sucks. It makes me sad. By the way, remember, I just brought him up as someone I was thinking about going into the postseason. That was, I guess, two or three starts ago when it was like, well, I know he's not perfect, but who else is going to start game 3? Well,
it
clearly
won't be
not
him.
Charlie Morton, as he's no longer on the roster. But okay, we'll get back to the macro of what Charlie Morton represents. So he gets destroyed on Friday, non-competitive. They lose 10-1. And then on Saturday, it's like, all right, it felt like they had the moment, the season-saving moment. We're turning this ship around. Spencer Torkelson says it stops today. He hits a huge go-ahead home run in the 7th. And it was like, okay. All right, everybody relax.
Exhale.
Tigers going to win again. GMAC cash. Play the GMAC cash. We're chilling. Oh, Will Vest, who really has been their best reliever, gives up 2 runs. Nacho Alvarez.
Not
tormenting.
Bulletproof.
The Detroit. No, bulletproof vest. No. He gives up some runs, and the Braves win 6-5. That was devastating. And then on Sunday, it was back to just non-competitive. Spencer Strider dominates. Yep. The Braves put up 11 hits. And the Tigers, you know, some, you know, modicum of spirits in the 9th inning to not get shut out. But really, it was, again, just the lifeless performance as the Tigers get swept by the Braves and were bailed out by the fact that the Guardians finally slipped up on Sunday. Their 10-game winning streak came to an end. Yes, they had won 10 games in a row. When they go to Minnesota, of course, that is a fortunate scheduling circumstance for them with the Twins team that has just, we've seen it, whatever, since the deadline.
Mailed it in.
This has not been a pretty sight, and that's sure what it looks like. They went, and this is, by the way, this is 4 games in 3 days because it's a doubleheader on Saturday. This is a rescheduling of a rainout. So we're packing a lot of baseball in at the end of the season here. Parker Messick's great on Friday. Slade Ciccone, Logan Allen, both go 7 and 8 scoreless on Saturday. So they shut out the doubleheader on Saturday.
Let me
6-0.
Can I hop in on the doubleheader?
Yeah.
So the Guardians during this stretch have been running a 6-man rotation. And usually you run a 6-man rotation because you're like in a playoff spot and you want to rest arms. You do it at the beginning of the year to keep workloads down. And one of the reasons, this is my understanding, that the Guardians have been running a 6-man rotation is because they knew this doubleheader was coming up. And like they wanted it to be set up in a way where they could have real starters throwing both of those games. And it worked perfectly. Like this is a great example of something that the Guardians are good at. Seeing this in advance, scheduling in time, making sure everyone's prepared, and Slade Ciccone, 7 scoreless, Logan Allen, 8 scoreless. Like, this is exactly how they drew it up, and I think that that is a level of, like, team management that is very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, but also, like, you still need your pitchers who have been occasionally good and occasionally not to be good. And all of them have been good, right? That especially mm-hmm. Logan Allen really turned it on recently. Ciccone's been great. And then Cantillo, he's solid on Sunday. Unfortunately, the bullpen has a bit of a slip up in kind of frustrating fashion as Matt Festa allows a homer to Brooks Lee on the first pitch when he comes in. And then Hunter Gaddis allows a big home run to Royce Lewis. So the Twins able to win 6-2 on Sunday. And that's a big deal. I mean, that is where the margins are this slim at this point. I mean, the opportunity is still golden for Cleveland. They've clearly played their way into it and absolutely can just win the division now. But that is still a game that could haunt them. We'll see. Either way, to then come home, to finish with this homestand, they have to be feeling good. Of course, they would have loved to keep that winning streak alive. But it's right here, man. This is an unbelievable sequence of events. This is a Tigers team who looked headed to be the first team to, I mean, if you asked this even a month ago, let alone, you know, at the beginning of July when they had that 15 and a half game lead, you said, oh, who's going to win the division first? Okay, maybe the Brewers, but like the Cubs are still kind of pushing them. Like, it's probably going to be the Tigers. They're a million games up and Cleveland's a mess. Like, there's no way it's going to be anybody else. The Tigers might not win the division at all, which is absurd. But as AJ Hinch can keep saying, hey, listen, we're still waking up tomorrow in first place. We still have an opportunity with Tarek Skubal on the mound on Tuesday to kind of get us back on track. But I just don't know how many more times you can ask Tarek Skubal to save your ass, because he can't do it all. He certainly can't score the run. Two is, I guess, the answer, although who knows where they could be eliminated by the last day of the season, depending on how this goes. We will see how this shakes out. Yeah. Although, by the way, it's also absurd to think that, like, if they need Skubal to pitch two more times this regular season, what would even happen if they get into October? Like, whatever, who cares? At this point, they're just trying to not experience the ultimate embarrassment of missing the postseason after having this large of a division lead. And that is unfortunately in play for Detroit. And as we'll pivot to Cleveland here in a second, but I mean, this is potentially historic. Again, there's still time for them to change the fortunes here, but this is setting up to be an all-time collapse. It in some ways already has been an all-time collapse that they're even in this position. They should have been they should have been popping bottles last week based on where we were heading. And instead, it's the exact opposite. They're playing some of the biggest games that this team has dealt with. And, you know, sure, the history is not like some of the other teams that have come closer, have, you know, made the postseason and haven't been able to get over the hump. We're still in the early stages of this competitive window for the Tigers. But what is so disappointing for a lot of Detroit fans in looking at how they've handled the season and how they handled the deadline is it looked like a golden opportunity to leap even farther forward than we thought that they could after last year. And instead, they've fumbled it away. And now you just kind of, it's not that we think that they're never going to be good again, but are they going to ever have an opportunity like this again that they looked to have a couple months ago? That's what's harder to see.
F your windows. Like, you don't know how long it's going to be open. Look at the Orioles right now. You know, when you have a good team that's clicking, take advantage of it. And it is funny to compare the Tigers' deadline, which was passive and relatively cowardly, with like the Mets deadline, which at the time we loved and was aggressive and they did stuff, and neither has worked, right? But I think it is understandable the Tigers fans are frustrated with the lack of action, and the comments from President of Baseball Operations Scott Harris kind of inferring that, look, saying that, you know, we could have gotten bit in the ass if we had made moves that we would have maybe regretted. It's like, well, you know what you really regret is where you're at right now. And the last thing I want to say about these two teams before we take a break, the Guardians starting pitching, in my opinion, is why we're here. Like, yes, the Tigers have not scored a lot of runs and their pitching has been bad, but the Guardians rotation in their last 19 games has allowed 19 runs. One earned run per game for the starting staff. That's it. That's the situation, right? That is why they are, over that span, 16-3. That is why they are one game back. They are scoring just enough runs, relying just enough on Jose Ramirez, who, by the way, good player, to make it work. And all the credit in the world to the Gardos. They're playing free. They're playing loose. They're playing with joy. And I cannot wait to watch these games this week. What nights are you gonna go?
I'll be there all three. We'll see, because our podcast scheduling for later this week will kind of impact some of those plans. But either way, yeah, I can't wait. And yeah, as for the Tigers deadline, it's right, because you can see, it's like, well, if you had traded all these prospects and you might have still been here anyway, because you might have gotten the wrong guys. some of it is optics, some of it is real baseball debate, what you should have done, but it also speaks to where how their actual team has performed, which is that the players on the roster who made up one of the best teams in baseball for the first half have played like one of the worst teams in baseball for the second half. So regardless of who they added and who they didn't, and clearly the guys that they added have not helped, in some ways they have hurt, and so that is on Scott Harris. The players that were already on the roster that were playing so well for so long have gone in the other direction. And that is a failure of the players. I mean, it's a failure of the player. I mean, that's what it is. I know we don't like to often be like, it's the player's fault. We love to blame the coaches. We love to blame the manager and the ownership and everything. And that's fine. There's plenty of blame to go around. But at some point, when you're a team that looked to be that good, you know, there's a different version of this Tigers season where it was a little bit more of a humble step forward and they were in playoff position, but it was like, okay, you know, they're in there. And if they had kind of fallen off in the second half,
they
would have been like,
all right,
like this is still a young team and we're still don't really quit. No, this team was demolishing people for 3 months and then suddenly it was just the total opposite. So, but yeah, that's what, but for Cleveland, man, oh man, what a story. So many unbelievable plot points for this story. It is the story of starting pitching. Of course, this losing two of their most important pitchers still looming in the background as this amazing plot twist that is of course part of their story as well. But yeah, when you got Jose Ramirez and just enough else, you can win some baseball games.
Hashtag free Class A, dude. Free Class A this week. Bring him back. Class A innocent. Can you imagine the news doesn't break? Ninth inning, they sneak him onto the active roster. He's absolved of all wrongdoing. And he comes out for the ninth. Surprise! Place goes banana land. Oh.
And then Kerry Carpenter hits a home run. There you go, Tigers fans. I'll give you that as a salve, a moment of good vibes.
There you go.
Set the stage standings-wise before we take a break.
Okay, so in the American League, the Astros and Guardians are tied for that final spot. The Red Sox are one game ahead of them. Yankees are three games ahead of the Red Sox. From a divisional perspective, the Mariners are currently three games up over the Astros and have the tiebreaker. The Tigers are up one game over the Guardians and have that tiebreaker is TBD. If the Guardians win one of the three games in the series this week, they will have the tiebreaker over them. The starting pitching matchups for those three games are Skubal against Gavin Williams on Tuesday, Jack Flaherty against Tanner Bibee on Wednesday, and then Cater Montero and Pitching Chaos against Parker Messick on Thursday. I feel very fortunate. Jordan, a month ago, we were like, this season looks boring. What's going to happen? And we have been gifted delight here down the stretch. The playoffs are the best form of baseball. It is meaningful. It is high stakes. There is tension. We have bonus playoff baseball, effectively, this week. It is an extra week of it. And I am so grateful for that. And I hope everybody listening is too. Make sure you tune in to the Guards Tigers this week. Okay, let's take a quick break, and we'll do the National League, which is also a total mess. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. That was the American. Let's go around the National League. All right, results from the weekend. Reds, mop, four games against the Cubs. Oh, my God. The Mets, who are in wild card position, losing 2 out of 3 at home to the Nats. Diamondbacks take 2 out of 3 over the Phillies at home. Here are the current standings in the National League. After clinging to the final wild card spot for what felt like months, what was months, the New York Mets are no longer in control of their own destiny, which, if you really do think about it, were the Mets ever in control of their own destiny? Were any of us, especially Mets and Mets fans? The Mets and the Reds have the same exact record at 80 and 76. But the Reds have the tiebreaker over the Mets. The Padres are effectively locked into that second spot. The Cubs are locked into that first spot in the NL wild card. And so we have Reds and Mets with the same record. Diamondbacks just one game back of the two of them. What in the freaking world? Giants two back of the Diamondbacks, Marlins and Cardinals one game back of the Giants. So that is four-game gap Marlins-Giants, four-game gap Cardinals-Marlins, three-game gap Giants, one-game gap for the Diamondbacks, Mets, and Reds are tied. Let's begin in Queens, because this story, with all due respect to the Reds, I know that they mopped this weekend.
Hold on, pause. Let's be clear. We have at no point given any amount of due respect to the Reds. Don't even give me that. I know, and I'm not saying that hasn't been justified. I'm just saying that phrase in particular has not been accurate for much of this season. And to your point, you're about to say, they earned that. Because a week ago, they got swept by the A's, and we thought we were done talking about the Reds. Okay? So that's why we're there. However, it is just a funny way to say, to be like, I know you just mopped the Cubs and you're in playoff position and control your own destiny, but let's talk about the Mets first. Go ahead.
Well, because if you look at the numbers, that's what it should be. Good for the Reds. Reds fans, be happy. That's what I'm saying. The Reds are 36-35 since July 1st. They are 23-23 since August 1st, and they are 11-8 in September. This is not the Guardians or the Mariners. This team has not charged from deep. They have not gotten really hot. They have not forced the issue. I think in the American League, the Guardians put pressure on the Tigers and helped with that collapse. In the National League, that is not the case. The Mets have dropped the chili on their own. Like, the Reds have just been hanging around, and they deserve credit for, I guess, hanging around. But if the Reds sneak in, I will remember this as a Mets collapse, not as a Reds charge. I think in the American League, I will remember it as a Guardians charge and a Tigers collapse. That is all I'm saying.
Sure. No, that's fair. And again, I'm not necessarily disagreeing. It's just funny. So let's start in Queens then. Okay. Let's talk about that, because the chili dropping that you're referring to is many months long now, where the Mets have been essentially a bad baseball team. But when we're in crunch time and you've got the Washington Nationals, who you could make an argument this is the second worst team in baseball. I know the White Sox have still on record and in general, but if you're saying who has been the second worst team in baseball in 2025, like the totality of it, who has looked like the second worst team in baseball, I think you can make an argument it's the Nationals. All right. I know they have some talented players. You can make that argument. And you have them come into town and you lose a series. And this is not just lose a series. I mean, these two losses on Saturday and Sunday were truly, I mean, this was a special kind of losing for the New York Mets. I'm sorry to all of the Mets fans that listen to this pod, but this was really rough and speaks to what you are getting at, which is that this has been building up to this moment where they finally fall out of playoff position in fairly embarrassing fashion. Now, like we said about the Tigers. Well, actually, not like we said about the Tigers, because they don't control their own destiny anymore. There is still a path for the Mets to make the postseason. It is not over, but they are in a much more precarious position. They're in a much more precarious position because of what the Reds have done. But yeah, harping on this series quickly, I mean, listen, on Friday, it looks like what it's supposed to. They win 12-6. Soto hits his 42nd homer. The Mets, Sprout was a solid, bullpen solid. Okay, great. You know, we're cruising. All is well. And then on Saturday, it seemed like they were going to come back and win. Jose Ferrer throws a career-high 43 pitches. Quick note, Jose Ferrer, still not sure if he's the worst elite reliever in the league or the best bad reliever in the league. Every time I'm watching, I'm like,
I totally agree.
I'm like, damn, I want that guy on my team, but also, he's kind of a mess sometimes. So they push him. Soto ties it, but they can't walk it off. They go to extras, and they can't score against Saren Lau in his sixth major league appearance and PJ Poulin, God bless him, Dalen Lyle inside the park go-ahead home run. And I'm just like, oh my God, like that's an awful loss. And if you think that's bad, on Sunday, Jacob Young makes two of the greatest catches of the season. Mitchell Parker in his first career relief outing with the highest qualified ERA in baseball. 3 2/3 innings for the save, longest save in Nats history, I believe I saw.
Which is Jordan, awesome. You say highest qualified ERA in baseball. Do you know who has the second highest qualified ERA in baseball?
I believe it's the guy that started the game, right?
It was the guy that started. It was Jake Irvin. So Jake Irvin, 5.69. Mitchell Parker, 5.72. Oh. The two highest qualified ERAs in baseball. They piggyback to keep the Mets to just two runs across nine innings. And like the – so Jacob Young makes bonkers catch number one with the hacky sack, keepy uppy. I've never seen anything like that play in the middle of the game.
Never will again.
Against Brett Beatty.
Yeah.
But the catch in the ninth inning against Francisco Alvarez, legitimate home run, Rob, would have tied the game. And at that point, I mean, from an energy perspective, Mets just pack it up. Like Jacob Young, you're done. Like Jacob Young killed you off, right? Like that's it. The Mets could still make the playoffs, but do you think they will? I don't. They've given us no reason to believe that they will over the last couple of months. This has been a slow burn. They had the very famous 2007 collapse where they were up 7 with 17 left and it just exploded in an instant. This has not been that. This has been a leaky faucet, all right, that slowly gets worse and worse until you're knee deep in sewage in your own house.
Well, and also, it's a different kind of, again, we could debate all day what's worse, Tigers versus Mets. And again, division lead versus the Mets have been clinging on to a spot at the bottom of an expanded postseason field, fending off teams that haven't been very good. You could say the same thing about Detroit based on how bad Cleveland was for a while. But still, like, this has not been a team that was awesome and then bad. It's a team that was really pretty good and then has just been bad for a while and have benefited from the midness of the teams that are chasing them. And it has finally caught up to them in a weekend where the Reds finally seize the opportunity and take all four games at home against the Cubs. We should pivot to Cincinnati unless you want to say anything else on the Mets. I feel like we've been mean enough.
But, I mean, the Mets are 44-54 since June 1st. They're 10 games under 500 since June 1st.
Yeah, that's not gonna cut it. And by the way, again, the contrast with the Tigers, they made moves to seemingly be like, listen, we still believe in this team. This is a team that still belongs and has the ceiling and the talent to go have this run. And
here's the other
instead,
thing.
I mean, oof, yeah.
Do you know where the Mets rank in OPS since August 1st?
Probably decently well.
First.
Oh.
The Seriously? New York Mets have scored the like second seven. Most runs. They have scored the second most runs in baseball since August 1st and have the highest OPS.
And where are they in pull up where they're at in ERA over that span while I pivot to the Cincinnati Reds.
Because ERA over that span?
Obviously,
they are 4.94. That is sixth worst. If you just go with starters, they are fifth worst at a 5.42. So there is the problem. I found the problem, Jordan. I found it.
Oh, thank you. You should let them know because we're running out of time. You should probably tell them, hey, guys.
David Stearns.
You got it. Hey, maybe give Cleveland a call and be like, guys, what are you doing to like stop the other team from scoring?
How you
going
do
on
that?
There? How you pulling that off? Okay, anyway.
How you do that?
The Cincinnati Reds, Jake. Now, they benefit from playing a Cubs team that once they clinched their spot, which they did, congratulations, Cubs. This is not taking anything away from their season. They have really been stuck in that top wildcard spot for weeks because they can't catch the Brewers and they're so far ahead of the Padres. And so you can imagine just natural human instinct is that the Cubs are maybe not necessarily playing with a whole lot of urgency this weekend.
But off
you know
gas.
What? Who cares? Because listen, Reds, you've been playing bad teams like you did last week and you couldn't get the job done. And finally, they answered the call well after we were assuming that we were done talking about them. And they mopped the Cubs, the final mop of 2025. They'll always have that. Whatever happens from here, you can raise the banner, final mop of 2025. Take
Congrats,
it all for
guys.
Over these Cubbies. It starts on Thursday with the best performance of Hunter Green's life, with the complete game shutout. He absolutely dominates. That was awesome. And by the way, like, as we start looking ahead to the possibility of the Reds being in the playoffs, that is important. Because if you can get in and you can give Hunter Green the ball in game one, like, we will take you seriously. That is a very real thing.
I agree with you. Maybe we should let's go through the series first, because I want to talk about how the Reds are set up ahead with Hunter Green. I think is very relevant. They kicked Chicago's butt on Friday, win 7-4. Saturday, win 6-3. Spencer Steer homers again. Bad day on the mound for the Cubs. And then they win 1-0 again on Sunday. Gavin Lux's RBI double is enough. The Reds go Abbott, Martinez, Ashcraft, Tony Santion, who I believe is the longest tenured Red, for the shutout. Tyon's good, but not good enough. And since he wins 1-0 to finish them off.
And the Cubs have some, well, we'll move the Cubs to the side. Like, this Kyle Tucker calf injury seems like a pretty big deal. He's like, we don't know when we're going to see him. That seems important as we talk about the Cubs, but they're in the playoffs. We don't know about the Reds yet. So we'll put the Cubs to the side. We'll talk about you when we get to October, but this is, again, Reds taking advantage and the pitching really showing up. Honestly, it's not too dissimilar of a recipe as Cleveland, if we're being honest. You know, is like,
I agree.
We do have enough pitching to keep the team, even at home in you know, hitter friendly Great American. We have enough pitching to win these close games, and you know, the bullpen's not necessarily full of guys that you've heard of, but it's been good enough, and now you're in position where you do control your own destiny. And as we pivot back to Hunter Green, they have the Pirates coming to town. What projects to be Hunter Green against Paul Skeens on Wednesday? Now that's fun. That sounds like something that will divert my attention to some degree from what's going on in front of me in Cleveland, because it will be Paul Skeens' final start of the season. It will be Hunter Green. Now this is important. Okay, so if Hunter Green is going to start on Wednesday, what would that mean for his availability for the start of the postseason or for a potential game 162? In that scenario, I think he would pitch in game 162, right? Like, they're not going to, if they need to win on the last day of the season to get into the postseason, it's going to be Hunter Green, and they'll figure it out from there. But that is a huge deal as we talk about how serious we're going to take Cincinnati going into the wildcard round, is whether Hunter Green has to pitch again. Now, they have to get there first. They have to win enough games. They have to stay ahead of the Mets. They have to still make this happen, stay ahead of the Diamondbacks, right? But that is something to consider too, with Cincinnati as they look forward. They have other good pitchers, of course. That's why they're here, because they have other good starting pitching. But Green is one of the best pitchers in the league. So he's such a big part of where we go from here.
The 3-seed Los Angeles Dodgers are hoping, not that the Dodgers need any more, you know, good bounces or help or favors from the baseball almighty, but the Dodgers on Rosh Hashanah will be praying that Hunter Green has the throw on Sunday and they don't need to see him during the NL wildcard festivities the following week. That is very much in play. Before we take a break, we should at least say the Arizona Diamondbacks exist. They are one game back. Like, they are literally one game out of a playoff spot, even though they traded away their starting first baseman, their starting third baseman, and their number two pitcher at the deadline, Merrill Kelly. They held on to Zach Gallen, and he's been awesome. Like, he's been really good. Over the weekend, they lose the first game of that set to the Phillies. Nick Castellanos hits his 250th career home run. The Phillies piggyback Taijuan Walker and Walker Buehler into one person named Taijuan Walker Buehler, which is really just delightful, especially because they went in that order. Like, if it had been Walker Buehler, Taijuan Walker, that's like a waste, but they went the correct way. So good job to the Phillies for that. Diamondbacks on Saturday, they beat Aaron Nola 4-3. And then on Sunday, E-Rod, Eduardo Rodriguez, 6 scoreless. Corbin Carroll goes 30-30. Snakes win 9-2. They're one game back of the Mets and the Reds. They have the Dodgers coming to town this week for 3. The Dodgers can clinch there. Will they jump in the pool? Stay tuned. One of the more iconic baseball moments of the 21st century, in my opinion, the Dodgers hopping in the pool. Go back and look at some of those pictures. It's just such of an era, and it really does fill you up with joy. We have Ohtani against Fott on Tuesday. Snell Nelson And then on Thursday, Yamamoto Gallen is going to be very fun. Here's where things stand with the tiebreakers between these two teams, these three teams that are separated by one game. If the Mets and the Diamondbacks tie, so the Reds have a bad week, and the Mets and the Diamondbacks end up tied for that final spot, it will go to intra-division record, not head-to-head, because these two teams split their season series 3-3. Intra-division is different than inter-division. Intra means within, inter means without. And the Diamondbacks are 25-21 versus the NL West. They have six games left against the NL West. The Mets are 24-24 against the NL East within their own division. If these two teams finish with the same intra-division record, we'll talk on Thursday. If the Reds tie with either of these two teams, they have the tiebreaker. Okay. If all three teams tie with the same record, the Reds advance because they have the season series over both. So the Reds are not just sitting pretty in terms of recent vibrations, but they have the tiebreaker over both of these two teams separately and together.
Last thing about the Snakes, and then we'll take a break. I know that I think we understandably expressed a level of just like, how is this happening? Recently, when we saw where the Diamondbacks were in the standings, we said, this is ridiculous. Look at these teams that they're rolling out there and these players that nobody's ever heard of. I stand by most of what we said there. However, when you have this version of Zach Gallen, and even after all these trades, you can still roll out a top three of Ketel Marte, Corbin Carroll, Geraldo Perdomo, which is one of the best trios of position players in baseball. You're fun. You got a chance. You're going to score runs.
Yep.
And if you can patch together enough outs with God, again, they're still calling up people where it's like, who? What is happening?
Who you?
Who
you?
How did we get here? Whatever. Credit to this organization. And honestly, in kind of a similar way to Cleveland, where it's like, whatever they're doing, they're winning games. Like they're finding a way to still be relevant. This was true last season when they got eliminated, watching the Mets and Braves celebrate together, right? That was a tough end to last season. And unfortunately, we may be heading towards a very similar thing, albeit with a very different path to get here for Arizona. But I did want to give the Snakes a little bit more love than we kind of have in recent weeks, because especially as a neutral, they're giving us another thing to watch, another series to keep an eye on. They do have a tough road here with the Padres and Dodgers to finish the season. How much those games mean to those two teams, either way, you're playing solid teams. But I gotta hat tip the Snakes a little bit more than we did the last time we talked about them. So just wanted to mention
good
that.
For you.
But as you mentioned, as it stands now, the Reds are in good position. They have the Pirates coming up, and then who do they have after that to finish? They have the Brewers, who are in all likelihood not playing for anything during the final weekend. All right, let's take a break, Jake. When we return, we'll talk about Clayton Kershaw and zoom through the rest of the weekend's results. Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Still plenty more from the weekend to get to, and there is one thing in particular that we need to talk about.
Jordan, in the end, when his daughter asked Clayton Kershaw, finally let go. By this point on Friday night, it was well after 10 p.m. and the sun had long since set on Kershaw's final home regular season outing. A handful of fans lingered in the stands celebrating the Dodgers' postseason clinch, but most were inching home, stuck in traffic, bumper to bumper, in a red sea of brake lights that flooded the hillsides. But few, surely, were doing so frustrated. It was a wonderful, celebratory evening full of toasts, ovations, appreciation, the type of night you brag about having experienced. But back on the diamond in the afterglow next to his mound, wearing shorts and blue flip-flops and bizarrely holding a pickaxe, stood Clayton Kershaw. Kershaw and his four kids were taking turns trying to dig the rubber out of the Dodgers Stadium mound. Eventually, with the help of the grounds crew, the Kershaws excavated their prize. How many times Kershaw had towed that slab, dug his Skechers cleats into the base of that white rectangle. There were few objects in the world that he was more familiar with. And yet, he had never held it in his hands. So when a member of the grounds crew shoveled the rubber out and put it in Kershaw's paws, it was much heavier than he anticipated, the weight taking him by surprise. The block sunk down in his arms. Then he slowly bent down to a knee and he lowered it to his children. He wanted all of them to lift it together. So the four Kershaws, Clayton, Charlie, Callie, Chance, Cooper, shuffled into position around the rubber, each grabbed an end, and together with their dad's help, they lifted it. But Callie, Clayton and his wife's Ellen 10-year-old daughter, wanted to do it without her father's help. "Dad, let go. Let go, Daddy," she pleaded. "You have it for real?" Clayton asked, unsure. "Yes," she said. And so finally, Kershaw relented, sliding his hands off the rubber, rising to his feet and exiting from frame, pulling himself away, removing himself from the moment. And for a few seconds, Kershaw's personal legacy held his professional legacy aloft, the kids giggling at the absurdity of it all.
Thank you for that. That was a good addition to, I think, what was a weekend of very memorable images, as you described so beautifully there. And yeah, I mean, in very simple terms, that mound belongs to Clayton Kershaw, right? I mean, there have been a lot of great pitchers that have appeared on that mound over the years. But if anyone was going to take it, it should be him. And it's also great because it definitely required all four children to hold this, right? This was not, this is probably not something one of them would have been able to hold. Yeah. I mean, you don't see mounds taken out like that very often. But yeah, this was a very, very cool moment. And as you mentioned, a lot of awesome things surrounding Kershaw this weekend. So definitely appreciated that. I'm sure he wishes that final home outing had gone a little bit better, you know, allowing that leadoff homer to Elliot Ramos. And it was like, oh, how long is this going to go? But Dodgers still come back and win. They win on Thursday. They win on Friday. They win on Saturday. Ohtani's just going off. Yamamoto looks great. And then, unfortunately, the Blake Treinen has a tough go of it on Sunday, and the Giants win to avoid the mop. That said, you know, beyond Kershaw and Ohtani, which, man, oh, man, the real takeaways for the Dodgers now as we head towards October, because they're narrow, you know, zeroing in on another NL West title, surprise, surprise, is Yamamoto has now gone three straight starts allowing one hit, which is pretty cool. I know his command was kind of a mess this last time out, but still it was more effectively wild than it was just like flat out dominant. Six walks, seven strikeouts, very uncharacteristic for him, but still one hit and no runs against the Giants on Thursday. But I gotta give some love to Emmett Sheehan. This dude's been on one for the last month, and I don't know where he fits in. He's the one that made the emergency start when they pushed Ohtani back in Pittsburgh, when I went to Pittsburgh to see Ohtani pitch, and he's like, oh, no, Ohtani's sick. It's fine. We got Emmett Sheehan. His line in that game against Pittsburgh was not great, but he looked great. And his line in his four other outings over the last month has been spectacular. And he was nearly flawless on Sunday. You know, the bullpen coughs it up. But this is a really, really good pitcher. It's important for the Dodgers moving forward, but I'm really curious where he fits in, because as important as Kershaw is, and whether we see Kershaw in the postseason or not, it's pitchers like Emmett Sheehan, when the Dodgers are weighing, like, are we really going to give Kershaw the ball? It's because you have guys like Emmett Sheehan, and he's arguably earned it a lot more over the last month. If we're talking about taking our best pitchers to October, Emmett Sheehan's in that mix for sure with how he's looked. And so I think where he ends up is going to be really interesting. And then the last thing just about the Dodgers is just a couple notes to keep in mind. Will Smith is hurt. I mean, he's got a fractured hairline fracture in his hand that is clearly not going to be fixed anytime soon. It's a really disappointing not necessarily ending, because it sounds like he's going to try to come back at some point, although it's unclear when that is. But remember, so much of the storyline with Will Smith over the course of the season is, let's keep him fresh, let's keep him healthy, so that when we get to October, we can have one of the best hitters in baseball available. And this is, you know, of course, a fluke catcher-esque injury where you take a foul ball and you break your hand. But either way, I mean, that's a part of the lineup that it does not feel like they're going to have at full strength, if at all. Ben Roethlisberger has been shockingly effective and getting all kinds of praise for his work behind the plate. And we'd love to see our guy Dalton Rushing contribute as well. But that is a big deal if Will Smith is kind of a non-factor for the Dodgers in October. So we'll see about that. And then Roki. Roki pitched again in relief in AAA. And it seems like they're setting up for him to appear in the big leagues over this final week in a relief role as a sort of a final audition to kind of make the postseason roster. So we're keeping an eye on that. I know we disagreed strongly over how likely it was that he actually makes the postseason roster. I think it is still definitely probably less likely than likely, but it seems like they're at least giving him an opportunity to show them that he belongs on the roster in a relief capacity. And when you see Trinan coughing it up again, like, and Kirby Yates continues to stink it up, like, there are seemingly opportunities in the bullpen for this Dodgers bullpen to improve, and Roki could maybe represent that.
We still have many things to talk about and not a whole lot of time remaining. Let us go fast.
Faster than fast, quicker than quick. I am lightning.
I feel the need for speed.
It's turbo time.
Yankees taking 3 out of 4 over the Orioles in Camden this weekend. I was there for 3 of these games, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Freed great in the Thursday game. Trevor Rogers in the one game the Orioles win, brilliant again. I think Trevor Rogers needs to get Cy Young votes, and I think he will. He has, in 17 starts, I believe, he has allowed he has a 1.35 ERA in 17 starts. A 1.35 ERA in 17 starts. That is like a run better than Skubal.
Yeah, so the AL Cy Young race is interesting. I was thinking about this weekend too. Is he going to get votes? The argument is that this is one of the greatest run prevention seasons of the last 100 years for like a minimum of 15 starts and 100 innings. The argument against is that there are other awesome candidates who have thrown 90 more innings than him. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a couple fifth place, but I don't think it's a certainty.
Yeah.
What he is doing has been historic, but we'll see, because it's obviously a small sample.
Game 3 of this series, Rodon was awesome. Carlos going 7 innings, allowing just 1 earned run late in that one. Most swing and misses on his changeup in a single game in his entire career. I wrote about Rodon today at Yahoo, how he has been forced to evolve as a pitcher. Now, that is something that all pitchers eventually have to deal with, to learn to pitch without your velocity. In 2021 and 2022, Rodon was bullying people, right? He was overpowering with his fastball, and then he would use his slider as a swing and miss outside the zone. When the league catches up to him and velocity becomes more commonplace, and his fastball takes a step back due to some injuries in 23 in his first year with the Yankees, he can't just do that anymore. He can't bully people. And so in 24 and coming into 25, he had to learn how to evolve. And so far, he has done that. He has mixed in a whole bunch of new pitches. He is throwing his changeup 16% of the time now. He is throwing a sinker that he learned a week before the season started 10% of the time. And he looks like a legitimate playoff number 2, which is huge, because now that, you know, Gerrit Cole's been out for the year, Max Fried's going to start game 1 and Rodon is going to have to be good in game 2. Last year in the playoffs, things sped up on him a little bit. He did not exactly inspire confidence as the number 2 behind Gerrit Cole. I talked to him yesterday. He just seems to have a better understanding of himself and how he would get outs. He told me, you know, looking back on the Dodgers outing in the World Series, he, with his current capabilities, would pitch that game differently. And I think that is something that is encouraging as the Yankees head into October.
The Blue Jays, meanwhile, drop a series against the Kansas City Royals. They are able to not get swept with a win on Sunday, and they do clinch a playoff spot, become the first AL team to 90 wins. They are 2 games up on the Yankees with 6 to play. It's really 3 games because they do have the tiebreaker over New York. The Blue Jays have the Red Sox and then Rays both at home. The Yankees have the White Sox and then Orioles both at home. So schedule-wise, there is still a path for the Yankees to eke out a surprise division title, but I expect the Blue Jays to get the job done. It feels like they've been hanging on and playing good enough ball. Obviously, it was a bit of a setback this weekend, especially on Friday, where they got absolutely blown out and Max Scherzer did not get out of the first inning. But I still think the Blue Jays are going to be able to get this done. So we will see if anything changes between these two teams. It seems like we are heading towards the Blue Jays having the top seed with the Yankees hosting that first wild card round. Let's stay in the American League East, where the Red Sox had an opportunity to get a little bit more comfortable. The Red Sox are another interesting character in this American League wildcard race. They had an opportunity to sweep the Rays on Sunday, and they were not able to do it. This was kind of a strange situation. Game played on Sunday night due to the Tampa Bay Bucks game earlier in the day, I believe, because the Stein shares essentially a parking lot and street with the Bucks stadium. So it would have been logistically messy to have both of those games going on at the same time. Anyway, the Red Sox cannot sweep the Rays. And because of that, they're only 1 game up on Cleveland and Houston. So again, the focus has been on Houston falling and Detroit falling and Cleveland surging. The Red Sox are also kind of sweating it out here, potentially. And their last two series are against the Blue Jays this week, who are, of course, trying to wrap up the division title. And then the Tigers this weekend. And it's not just the Tigers and Guardians this week. Tigers-Red Sox currently projects to be the highest stakes series for the final weekend. We will see how that looks once we actually get there. That said, Boston, again, it looks like they're kind of flying under the radar here. But there's very much a scenario where they fall, even if they do make the playoffs, where they fall to that last spot and have to go somewhere else than New York. There's a lot of different machinations where this could go. Don't forget about the Red Sox, for better or for worse. They are still also floating right in there. And if they end up missing the postseason after this wild year, that would also be a huge story. But I think they'll be okay. But the Red Sox, this never count out the Red Sox out of something that you don't expect here. So I'm watching them too this week. We will see.
Don't count the Red Sox out. Don't forget about the Red Sox, but you can probably forget about the Texas Rangers, who were swept over the weekend by the Miami Marlins. That's it for the Rangers. Wrap it up, Box. No Moss. They are probably not going to make the playoffs, currently on an L7, but congrats to the Marlins, who are somehow only 4 games back from a wild card spot. They are at 76-80. Getting to 500 would just be amazing. They're at the Phillies for 3 this week and then home against the Mets to finish. They were calling pitches from the dugout, which we could do 20 minutes on. Let's back pocket that and use it this offseason, because it is a much longer discussion. Baseball's okay. This is not an existential threat yet. Padres taking 2 out of 3 over the White Sox to remain in that second wildcard spot. They're not going to catch the Dodgers in the division. I believe the Dodgers have the tiebreaker, and the Padres are 3 games back. That's basically a 4-game gap. Fernando Tatis homers in Game 3 in a revenge game. White Sox legend Fernando Tatis Jr. People, oh, how quickly they forget. Adrian Morahone gets his 13th win of the season in the second game. Adrian Morahone is a reliever. He has the same number of wins as Tarek Skubal and Christopher Sanchez. Baseball is weird as hell. Cardinals take 2 out of 3 over the Brewers as Caleb Durbin, the pride of Washington University in St. Louis, returns to the old stomping grounds. Cool to see that. Go Bears. The Brewers are going to be the one seed almost certainly, and that's all I got. The Nolan Arenado ovation was very bizarre. Nolan Arenado, who essentially requested a trade and then retracted it when he didn't want to go to the Astros, came back, was very mid with the most mid Cardinals team ever, and is under contract for next season and got a standing ovation. Am I missing something here?
Listen, this is a very, very strange very, very strange situation. It seems like they're just going to totally salary dump him somewhere this offseason in a way that is even more like less ceremonious than it would have been a year ago. I don't know how easy it's going to be to trade him, but it seems more likely that they're just like, okay, we're not even going to try and get top prospects. Just go somewhere else. We just need to move on here. But I don't know. That was really weird. Fittingly weird end to a very weird and forgettable Cardinal season.
Katie Wu, who covers the Cardinals for The Athletic, friend of the program. Originally out of the starting lineup for the home finale, Nolan Arenado is a very last-minute addition. He'll play third, bat sixth, in what could be, and frankly should be, his final game as a Cardinal at Busch Stadium. Let it eat, Katie.
Yeah, all of Nolan's quotes after the game were like, yeah, that's it, guys. We're done. We're done here. So I'm not, again, it's still unclear how exactly this is going
this
to officially end.
This happened last year.
But it's over. All right, last two series, Pirates over the A's. Nick Kurtz, 33rd homer. He's awesome. Pirates then shut out the A's over the last two games. Pirates lead baseball with 19 shutouts, and they stink. Oh, my goodness. Can you imagine if they could score runs maybe next year? Highlight of this series was a tie between the adorable Jacob Wilson, Jack Wilson first pitch, which was a reenactment of the one that Jacob did when he was a child, when his dad was on the Pirates. And now he is on the A's and his dad is still hanging out. And so they got to reenact that first pitch. But I know your favorite moment from this series was Dari Moretta, a reliever for Pittsburgh, who pulled out a wad of cash after closing out the game on Sunday, a 11-0 victory. It's not like he slammed the door on the save, but hey, a win's a win, and he wanted to thank his catcher, Joey Bart. And so how did he do that? He just smacked a wad of cash right into Joey Bart's right hand and said, gracias. Appreciate you, buddy.
Dowry Moretta,
his
nickname is Big Bank, because on a team flight once, someone asked if they had change, and he just like pulled out $2,000 worth of 20s. Pirates fans. He started doing the money sign off the mound. If you watch the broadcast back, there are a bunch of Pirates fans like holding money in the air as he's pitching. And then, but for him to pull it out of his pocket immediately after getting the save, and then basically high-fiving the dollar bill into Joey Bart's hand, like it's a drug deal. This is great stuff. Good job, Dowry Moretta. I hope he becomes a big deal on a big team at some point so he could just like get like a money gun on the mound. And this is awesome.
Yeah, maybe. All right. And then finally, oh boy, the Rockies did it. They avoided history. Not only did they get their 42nd win of the season on Friday, making sure they win more than the 2024 White Sox, they got their 43rd win of the season on Sunday. They win a series over the Angels, obscuring Mike Trout's 400th career homer that went 4 million feet into the left center field bleachers at Coors Field. Kyle Hendricks, 7 scoreless on Saturday. Love that for him. The Angels are an atrocity. The Rockies, I'm so glad that they got to finish this. I believe that was their final home game of the season on a high note in every sense. And yeah, good for the Rockies. Good for them. They avoid being the worst. This was still clearly one of the worst teams in baseball history. Let's not pretend like they weren't. And they still have many questions to answer from a big picture organizational standpoint. However, what looked at one point to be an absolute certainty that they were going to lose like 130 games, they did manage to avoid that. And you got to give them just the tiniest sliver of credit for doing exactly that.
I'm going to play devil's advocate. I'm going to say this might not be a good thing for the Rockies as a institution, because I think being the worst team of all time might have jolted them awake to make some real changes. And being two games better or whatever than the worst team of all time should still necessitate changes. However, given the Rockies' track record of irrationality, I am somewhat skeptical of that and think that there would have legitimately been a better chance of that happening had they been the worst team of all time.
Very valid. You're probably right, which is also very sad. As for Mike Trout, congratulations. it would make me feel way better if we were living in the timeline where this was his 500th career homer and the Angels were pushing for a playoff spot. Of course, that is very much not the case. But either way, he is still awesome, as we learned recently when everyone thought you were slandering him by calling Bryce Harper more important. Mike Trout is still amazing. Awesome. He is still a first ballot Hall of Famer. We still appreciate him. He is still one of the most important people baseball play. He is still one of them because he is one of the best. That said, a bit of a somber way for this to happen, to just hit it against the Rockies. But I'm glad that this did not drag into 2026. I will say that in some ways is a victory for Michael Nelson Trout. All right, Jake, we're done. We have writing Bye. To do. We have pre-postseason, postseason-esque baseball to prepare for. I'm really hoping the forecast holds up. It hasn't rained in here in Northeast Ohio in like a month, and now it's looking like we might get some showers this week in Cleveland. But I hope it doesn't impact these three games between the Tigers and Guardians. I will be there. I cannot wait. We'll be back later this week. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. What are we going to be talking about? We're going to be recording on Thursday night due to some scheduling conflicts. But I am so excited for this week of baseball. We hope you are, too. Email us, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. How excited are you? Let us know. Thank you to Ingrid Rosas and Andrew Hartz for producing this episode of Baseball Barbercast. Thank you, Jake Mintz, for doing this pod with me. We'll talk to you all later this week. Bye-bye.